we present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from The Times, read by Caroline Nichols.
The teenage son of a Russian retail tycoon has been charged after he allegedly strangled his mother with a telephone cord while at a hotel to attend a workshop on the importance of family.
Our thanks to John Sampson for taking the time off work to email us that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Mark Steele and Vicky Pepperdine. And opposite them on my left, Conservative peer Danny Finkelstein and Holly Walsh. So, Mark, who's had to renegotiate a renegotiation?
Well, I presume this is about David Cameron and his business in Europe, where it's so confusing for anybody because he sort of comes out and says things like, we have successfully renegotiated so that now Romanians will have to live in Britain for 9 years before they're allowed into a post office. And it's never enough. And then Farage will say, but there are still millions of Bulgarians over here using our pavements paid for by our taxpayers. Quite frankly, if they can't be bothered to just hover above them, they shouldn't be allowed here and they should be sent home. And then Cameron tries to come out with a more ridiculous one. And this is why it's so confusing, because from my point of view, I think, what am I going to vote? If I vote to stay in, well, then that's going to please David Cameron, and that is something that just turns your soul a dark, grimy shade of yellow and makes you sick up green, sticky liquid. But then if I vote to come out, then I'm going to be pleasing Farage. And surely pleasing Farage is illegal. It must... So, I don't know, and that's the trouble with it. And I think this is what most of the country's doing. They're watching, they're thinking, what shall I do? And they go, oh, no, Blair's for staying in, I'm voting out. Oh, Duncan Smith's for voting out, I'm voting in. Oh, Farage is for out, I'm voting in. Whoever wins will be the one that just takes all their supporters off to Mexico for 3 months.
Do you agree with any of this, Danny?
Yeah, of course. I couldn't. It would be difficult to find any disagreement between two of us on anything, really. I did like Prince William getting himself all engaged into this renegotiation by accident, because I think basically if you end up endorsing the EU without actually saying anything about the EU, you become Foreign Secretary now. I think that's it.
I like the way that Kensington Palace stepped in very quickly and said, oh, we just want to say that the Prince didn't say what you think he might have said. He actually said the thing he didn't say, or something, you know. Massive apology straight away from Kensington Palace. And I thought, that's actually quite useful to have your address apologise for a mistake you made the night before, you know. So, you know, Vicky wasn't drunk and didn't insult her boss at the office party, said 72 Walton Road.
Who's causing Cameron trouble, then? Who are the V4 group?
That's the Visegrad Four.
The Visegrad Four. Yeah, they are not fugitives of justice or anything. They are Poland, Slovakia, Hungary and the Czech Republic.
Of course.
They have lots of things in common, and they're one of the sort of obstacles, I suppose, that Cameron would
it's
have
all,
to get past.
It's all just fake, isn't it? He's not going to, at the end of this, go, oh, do you know what? In the end, we couldn't agree. It's all fake. It's all going to be contrived, isn't it? It's like wrestling, isn't it? You know, there's some people going, oh, it's not fake, it's real, you don't know who's going to win. He might come out with a negotiation with the Poles and the Slovaks, he might not. And all sensible people are going, oh, it's fixed.
Who is it fixed by? Which shadowy organisation?
Not shadowy organisation, is it? They're just sort of... They want Britain to stay in, so they're not... Merkel and all that's not going to allow Cameron to come back going, oh, those Germans, you know, so... But it's a wonder I'm not BBC political correspondent.
I think it's like a really bad episode of Don't Tell the Bride, where he's got 4 days to plan the perfect referendum, but will he get it right? And he's like, oh God, I mean, she said she liked goth stuff, so we're going to do it all in bin bags.
What is the mood like around... you don't have to reveal stuff that professionally you're not allowed to, but close to the throne of power, the seat of power?
Bizarrely, I think there is a sort of suppressed air of panic, partly for the reasons that Mark suggested, which is everyone assumes he's going to get a deal, and actually, in fact, he might not, and then what would he say? So that is difficult. Well, we'll see very shortly whether he's succeeded in doing it, and he has set the bar so that he'll succeed. What's certainly true is not very many people are following the details. So
it's very confusing. Yeah. There was a news report a couple of nights ago where they interviewed a couple who were anti-EU, and they were in the pub in a, I think it was a village somewhere called Middle England or something. And the guy literally said, "We don't want to be in the EU because we don't want the criminals." I mean, his wife looked a bit panicky and said, "We don't mind the doctors and the nurses coming over." And you could see him think, "Oh, they could be criminals too."
It's all that, isn't it? For all of this sort of intricate stuff that they sort of present on the news, at the end of it, the argument is just going to be so puerile. It's going to be like the Daily Express with a front page saying something like, "Now the French want to standardise breasts." They're going to make women's breasts, those stupid petite French Gallic ones, instead of the proper British buxom ones that we're used to. It's all going to be that. Now the Germans have said, now they're going to ruin agriculture. They're going to reclassify cows as herrings and make farmers throw cattle in the rivers.
Gosh, it's amazing to hear what keeps you awake at night, Mark. Who this week branded Britain a cake-filled, misery-laden, grey old island?
Emma Thompson.
The actress Emma
Thompson. Yes, I know the headline in The Sun was "Shut Your Cake Hole."
The communist Britain hater and Oscar-winning tireless charity campaigner, Emma Thompson. Salubriously, this is David Cameron's somewhat stressful week as he scurried around Belgium holding an important document in scenes reminiscent of one of Hergé's rather more tedious adventures of Tintin. Billions of blue blistering barnacles barked a quite grotesquely inebriated Nigel Farage. Some of the controversial aspects of the proposed deal include restrictions on child benefit, an emergency break to limit in-work benefits, for more economic protection of EU members outside the Eurozone, and for all of continental Europe to declare allegiance to David Cameron, who will then become emperor. Just a few niggling points there. I'm sure they'll sort out soon enough. Prince William made a speech this week where he appeared to back the UK staying in Europe, although one can't help feeling that in the good old days he could have sorted out all of our diplomatic problems simply by marrying a 9-year-old Spanish princess. Still, it was a fascinating insight into his views, or at least the views of whoever wrote those words on a piece of paper, slapped him twice on the buttocks and shoved him in the general direction of a lectern. 2 points to Mark. Vicky, where is sugar causing a stir?
This is about the amount of sugar in high street coffee shop drinks. Apparently, there's loads more sugar in a high street coffee shop drink than we ever dreamt in our wildest dreams. Even though you can't actually stand your spoon up in it, you practically can. So, I mean, when they mention hot drinks with lots of sugar, I just immediately thought of builder's tea, you know, sort of put six of those in for me, love. So I thought, well, that's just a British tradition. But then it turns out that actually it's a lot more sugar than that. And, you know, I mean, I was astonished, really, to be honest with you, because I go in there 3 or 4 times a day, and I was really surprised to discover that my choco toffee caramello fudger butter latte skinny butter latte actually had about 25 spoonfuls of sugar in it.
What I can't find amazing was when first of all the Starbucks spokesperson said, "Well, obviously these things are absolutely fine as part of a balanced diet." There's enough sugar in one of them for 3 lifetimes. For a balanced diet, you'd have to have sipped a third of it, left it in your will to your kids, then they have the next cup, and then your grandkids have a cup. Then, unless it balanced... And then they said, well, we're
trying... I like to think you can offset anything if you eat enough roughage.
And then it was, we are trying because we are committed to reducing the amount of sugar, like it's some huge engineering problem. Reduce the amount of sugar that we're shoveling in. I just don't know. If only Brunel was still alive, there's some clue as to how we can put less sugar in. We get up every morning, get a forklift truck, put 4 pallets of sugar in a huge great cup, scrammed with squashed caramel and marshmallows and whipped cream and concentrated Jaffa cakes, deep fried in boiled aero, and we just can't work out how we're going to put less sugar in it.
Holly, you're a young mother. You're presumably going to lots of coffee shops with other young mothers at the moment.
You patronising arsehole.
can see that.
I'm back at work like you are.
I can see that's an impressive stance to take. But half an hour ago, I said, "Oh, you're a member of an NCT group." You go, "Yeah, yeah, we go out for coffee all the time." So I said, "You disingenuous bitch." if it's all the same with you. Well, I mean, are you drinking quite a lot of...
I honestly haven't read the paper. I've been too busy in Nero, but... I get so annoyed by those places, though. All of them, those sort of coffee shops, you know, when they give you those loyalty cards and they go, "You buy 9 coffees from us, we'll give you 1 free," and they call it a loyalty card, and that annoys me, because it's not really... It's not loyalty, it's just a deal. Like, if it was loyalty, they'd be like, "You buy 9 coffees from us and you kill someone, you can hide out in any of our branches."
But why then, there's a lot of talk then about the sugar tax, or we've certainly spoken about it before on this programme. What is the government rumoured to be doing about the campaign?
Well, apparently they're not going to implement the sugar tax, or this is the rumour, that the plan to have a sugar tax is being abandoned, and there's a lot of people jumping up and down, partly from the sugar rush, obviously, from the high street coffee, but also people objecting to the fact that he's not going to implement this sugar tax, and people are saying he's kowtowing to the sugar barons who live on Sugar Mountain. and so there's a big furore about that.
So is it not going to happen, Danny, the sugar tax?
But I think in the end it will, actually. I think it'll take some time, yeah. I think it will happen, because I think there's that everyone thinks it's a good idea, and in the end, it'll break down the resistance to it, which is only the thought that people will have to pay for it who haven't got very much money, and that's the concern, which is obviously a proper concern. But in the end, I think people will see the advantage.
Well, the government doesn't take that attitude with anything else, do they? They say, "Oh, it's such a..." And they don't go, "Oh, it's such a shame that crack is so expensive." I mean, it's the poor that have the crack, and, well, you know, maybe if we sort of reduce the rate of crack...
But I reckon that, you know, the coffee chains will find a way of getting out of paying the tax, because they're quite good at that anyway, at least some of them. And they'll say, "Oh, you know, it's not sugar anymore because it's dissolved. So technically it's a different compound, so sorry, we're not paying it anyway."
And yes, sugar is solid. This is a liquid. You can't tax us for this.
Indeed, indeed.
So I've literally never had a coffee in Starbucks or Nero or anything, because all I drink is Diet Coke. It's all I drink at any time.
A much healthier option.
I had so many cans of Diet Coke in the fridge in Conservative Central Office that I caused an explosion.
Really?
It was all those women at 11 o'clock who were like, "Diet Coke break."
Oh, it's 11 o'clock. This is when Lord Finkelstein comes with Diet Coke. Let's pretend the lift's broken.
Let's make our windows really murky so he has to clean them with his top off.
Are we picturing the scene correctly, Danny?
That is exactly what happened.
Deliciously, this is the story that hot drinks from high street chains have been found to contain shocking levels of sugar. The lobby group Action on Sugar analysed 131 hot drinks, where they made 2 breakthrough discoveries. Firstly, that they contain dangerously high sugar levels, and secondly, that drinking 131 hot drinks will make you urinate non-stop for over 25 agonising hours. The worst offending drinks in question include the grape with chai, orange and cinnamon, the pumpkin spice latte and the caramel macchiato venti, proving at long last a direct link between levels of sugar and of insufferable smugness. Lobbyists have called for cigarette-style labels on high-sugar products, such as health warnings written by medical professionals, or simply a harrowing picture of a repentant Bertie Bassett crying out on his deathbed. Presumably, this means that Starbucks' notorious inability to pronounce your name correctly is actually a foretaste of how you'll be pronouncing it after your inevitable stroke. Just a bit of fun. 2 points to Vicky. Danny, who got a bad report because their inmates failed to report?
That was the Victorian Welford Road Jail in Leicester, which is one of Britain's most overcrowded jails, and it had an inspection report in 2013 and just had another one, and it basically said that inmates find it easier to get hands on drugs and alcohol than on basic toiletries and a change of clothes, although we did have a shopping centre like that in Hendon. My favourite thing about the Leicester Mercury story, it did say there were some compliments. Overall support for drug-addicted inmates was good. And then it said 14% of people had developed a drug problem since going to jail, and the chief executive of the Offender Management Service called this disappointing, which I think is quite a good phrase. So it's a very bad report.
Was there a thing where they didn't know where 30 of them were, of the inmates?
That's right, yeah. They were slightly surprised. It was sort of like they weren't told that there was going to be an inspection, so they were slightly caught on the hop, and they said, where are all the inmates? And they said, well, we don't know where all of them are.
Basically, they've gone home for the day or something.
Yeah. A lot of these people live locally, they've got people to visit.
The big problem with prisons, actually, used to be basically people getting out, and now the big problem they have is stopping people and things getting in. And they're very difficult. It's very difficult to do.
Do you know a lot about the prison system, Danny?
I wouldn't describe myself as an expert, but it's certainly sort of...
But certainly
important.
A fan, yeah. what's David Cameron said about prisons recently?
He's on the he wants to reform them. This is his big thing, isn't it? At the end of his tenure, he wants to reform prisons. One of my favourite things was that he went to... is it Onley? Is that how you say it? The prison? HMP Onley?
I really don't know. Danny, you're our prison guy.
Yes.
But he went there and apparently he was impressed because inmates were trained in bike repair and barista skills. And I thought, are they training them to be hipsters?
He wants to reform prisons. He wants to build a 6 super prisons, which is super in the sense of big, not super as in smashing.
It'll be all the words that my mum uses to describe a Christmas present that she didn't really want. Oh, smashing. Super.
Ooh, what a useful prison. Oh, we'll get a lot of use out of this prison, won't we?
It's a bit tight.
We have a prison like this.
Do they have a bigger size?
He also said ex-offenders may not have to reveal their criminal record when applying for jobs. So people just have to sort of sit there and explain.
I think that's good. I think that is right.
Well, there'll be a situation where we go, so how did you get your nickname, Strangler Bob? Skull Duggerously, this is the news that an inspection into Leicester Prison reported that there were high levels of violence, regular attacks on staff, and drugs and alcohol were readily available. So pretty much like Centre Parks without the wife swapping. In December last year, there was an incident in which inmates demolished the walls between their cells. But if you watch daytime TV for 8 hours at a stretch, the pressure to do some home improvement and knock through a kitchen diner becomes absolutely overwhelming. In the prison, as in the home, it's all a question of creating a sense of space.
If they've got the capability of knocking down a wall, that's pretty dumb to knock down the wall that just takes you to the next cell, isn't it?
I'd like to give a big shout-out, by the way, to any prisoners listening. I know that the news quiz is very popular on the wing. In fact, most of the cuttings we read out are simply coded messages to the outside world from... from hardened lags. Do keep sending them in, chaps. I only hope your contacts on the outside can make more sense of them than we can.
He's read one out from the Romford Observer. That's the signal to go. Come on, boys.
2 points to Danny. Holly, have a listen to this. Holly, why can't the FBI get to the core of their problem?
Well, this is the story about the FBI who are trying to hack into a terrorist phone. They're trying to hack into one of the people who did the San Bernardino incident earlier this year. And Apple are refusing to let them hack his phone. They said, we have security on all phones. We don't even know how to hack into our own phones. We're not going to even try and get into it. And the FBI are pretty annoyed about this, and they're taking it to court. And it's ridiculous. I mean, the whole thing... I actually think you should be unable to hack into somebody's phone. I think it's fair that everybody has unhackable phones. I also think, so once the FBI start asking Apple, you know, to do one tech favour, I've learned this with my parents, that... First of all, it's like, can you hack into my phone? Then it's like, how do I make my iPhone work with iTunes? Those people are going to be on tech call the whole time for the FBI. It's better just to say, no, I don't know how to make your TV work. You just got to do it yourself.
Yeah. What I don't understand is, why don't they just use his thumb? No one seems to have made this point at all. Why don't they just use his thumb to open the phone?
He might not have set up that thumb thing.
I bet he did.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Well, let's try it.
So they've got the guy's body.
Hack off the thumb.
They must have a thumb.
They don't have to hack it off. They don't have to treat it with disrespect. They could bring the phone to him.
I think...
I mean, for heaven's sake, Vicky.
No, I'm sorry. I had images of the FBI dragging him.
I think we've solved the problem.
I think that's where the expression hack comes from, actually.
I don't... His thumb?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I was...
Am I the only person in the room going, what are you talking about? I know you use your thumb, but surely his thumb, what is it, sort of specially
no,
like lined up with his...
No, there's like a locking thing that you can set up to only your thumbprint opens your phone.
Oh, my God. I feel older and older and older. With your phones now, right, so how often with these things you're sort of talking to people, what, and I think in 1972 you rang someone and you always got to the end of the conversation, always. Imagine back then saying, oh, you know what, you won't believe, in 45 years' time, technology will advance so much that every phone call will be going, hang on, I've lost you. You're breaking up, I've lost you. Everything's like that. Heating, right? I mean, heating in my house. The people come round and they set it up with a special digital thing and they go, oh, the marvellous thing with this is that you could be in Ecuador and you can, through an app on your iPhone, you'll be able to set it for 1 year and 4 months' time to come out at 8:30 in the morning and get all your hot water. But I've sat there in the house freezing, unable to turn it on. I can't get it on. I can't get it, ringing them up. How do I turn it? Well, you'll need to go to Ecuador and... time, all of it, and the washing machines, you might as well just do it in the sink, because millions of lights cascading, what are they? And then people go, oh, well, that one's if you want to wash the Turin shroud.
This is the sort of disillusionment that turns people against the West, Mark.
Commiserations that you lost your column in The Independent, but congratulations that you've got that new one in Saga magazine. Have a lot to say, so very exciting times.
Yes. And the thing is, I could do that column every week, and they'd have forgotten that they read it the previous week.
Does anyone think it's a good idea that the FBI being locked out of this phone, or a bad idea? Who feels strongly about this?
I feel strongly about it, but I've already said that, so.
Yeah, well, I don't want to upset you at all.
I'm just mystified because whenever I go to Peckham Market, there's signs everywhere saying we unlock phones. Mm. So,
yeah.
Couldn't the FBI just go there?
Yeah, go to Peckham.
It's my mate's phone. He's forgotten his PIN number. Could you just sort this out? And they would go, yeah, here, give five quid.
Come out of Rye Lane. It's on the overground. It's
not
difficult.
It's not hard.
I don't want people to unlock my stuff. I just don't, like, for example, I worry that, like, our computers are going to become sort of heirlooms in the future. And like, there'll be generations of people who'll be going, I got my great-grandfather's laptop, and it turns out my love of BDSM... dates back two or three generations. It's...
And do the other young mothers agree with you? Anaphylactically, a US federal magistrate has ordered Apple to help the FBI unlock the iPhone of suspected terrorist Syed Rizwan Farooq. This has put the FBI into conflict with two of the biggest religions on the planet, Islam and Apple. Both have millions of followers and both were founded by a man with a beard who people get very upset if you criticise. The FBI are looking for evidence that the shooters were influenced by Islamic fundamentalism. For instance, a downloaded terrorist handbook or a nude selfie with a poster of Osama bin Laden in the background. Actually, initially, they got the wrong Apple and spent 18 months on the phone to Yoko Ono, who advised them to listen to the voice of a flower while counting the number of stars in the sky or something. Donald Trump said that Apple should give the FBI the information, adding that he thought this because he was a common-sense conservative. Disappointing that he used two C words and managed to hit the nail on the head with neither. 2 points to Holly. And at the end of round one, the scores are Mark and Vicky have 4, but Danny and Holly have 5. We start round two with an advert scene in the Wealden Advertiser.
Over 60s Foot Clinic. Come in for a foot spa, exfoliation, and have your toenails cut over a nice cup of tea.
Our thanks to Malcolm Williams in Bexhill for sending us that coded message. Mark, have a listen to this.
Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche under the runner in the night. Blinded by the light, wrapped up like a douche under the runner in the night. Blinded.
Mark, who made a dazzling return home?
Oh, this just terrifies me, this sort of thing, because planes are just wrong, in my view. You convince yourself, no, it's all science and everything, and all these people, they go all over the world and they come back and the planes, it's just air and all that. And then things like this happen. This is someone shone a laser at the plane and the pilot was temporarily blinded. And then it was a Virgin plane and it had to turn back. Oh, if I was on that plane, oh, no. We would like to reassure passengers that everything is fine, but the pilot has been blinded by a laser. We will be turning around. He'll be sort of feeling his way through Braille. Don't worry about a thing, and we've all got to go sometime. Just terrifying.
This happened... well, it happens more than you might think. Do you mean how...
happens all the time!
There were 9,000 incidents in the last 6 years.
That is absolutely right.
Because people are getting their hands on these laser pointers, similar to what you have in offices, presentations. It sort of worries me. I mean, I wonder what other... Before they got to laser, what other office equipment they were using. Maybe a pilot was distracted by an overhead projector.
Basically, they're so unbelievably dangerous, and it is amazing that you can just buy them easily on the internet. I tried when this story came out. Yes, I tried to see whether you could do it. And basically,
wasn't you that did it?
2,000 milliwatt blue laser, high-powered thing for like £70, and it said 57% off fire sale.
So you've got one of these. And
I didn't actually buy it, but I just was fascinated by the fact that something so unbelievably lethal... By the way, it has absolutely no purpose whatsoever. I tried finding out what could you use one of these for.
Well, long-distance learning courses. You can point to the whiteboard for such a long way away.
You can use them for removing unwanted growth, which is something that doesn't...
Oh, like laser bikini.
Although even then you have to wear laser-safe glasses, otherwise it reflects back off the tank.
You can have sort of long-distance electrolysis or sort of a Ruka treatment.
Exactly. Yeah, you could do my armpits from there.
The good news is that the pilot on that plane's got no stubble at all now.
Tell you what else you can buy. Any kind of locksmith equipment, like skeleton keys, all of that stuff.
What, just a sort of basic burgling equipment?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, if you know people who come and open your door if you lock yourself... I locked myself out the other day, and this man, he looked like a tiny Timothy Spall, came round, and he literally sort of climbed in through the letterbox and then opened the door from the outside.
That's a really tiny Timothy
Spall. Yeah, you can buy a tiny Timothy Spall on Amazon for...
No reason. You don't need to have any qualifications. You just need to have the money to pay for a tiny Timothy Spall. Have you got quite a big letterbox? Is it a cat flap? Is it a big letterbox?
No, it's a normal size.
A normal size letterbox. So the man, an actual man, put it there.
Well, I said it for comic effect.
Every time I try to be reassured about plane travel, something like this happens, and then I think, oh, no. If these things are that lethal, then why did, like, ISIS bother going to all the trouble of getting all those surface-to-air missiles? They could just get one of these 75-quid things, sit around in Afghanistan.
Now you've just given them that idea.
Yeah.
You are no friend of the West.
No. They listen to the news quiz for relaxation.
Sinuously, this is the tale of a Virgin Atlantic flight forced to abandon its path to New York after the pilot was temporarily blinded by what is believed to have been a laser pointer. The plane got as far as Ireland before having to turn back, much like the Enlightenment. What would the Dambusters have done, I wonder? They would have made us proud to be British, that's what. They'd have flown on, they'd have dropped their bombs, which history has proven to be somewhat ineffective, and then flown gloriously home to their racist dog. I'm sorry, I think I've got something in my eye. Half of pilots have been on board a plane targeted by lasers in the last 12 months. And while it's obviously dangerous, a small number of these incidents lead to the pilot's short-sightedness being cured, which means he or she can leave their glasses behind and go on to find true love as their self-confidence blossoms. 2 points to Mark. Danny, who is refusing to move with the times?
Well, this is the decision to continue to inscribe all laws, instead of doing them digitally, on vellum. That is to say, on calf skin that's been soaked in lime wash and then scraped with a scudder. And then you write the laws down on that, and you can keep those on scrolls. And that's what they've decided to carry on doing it. They were about to move away from that system, which has been used for 800 years, and they've now decided to carry on with it. And I, basically, as a Jew, I'm concerned about how they killed the calf, because it's possible that our laws genuinely aren't kosher.
Why is it felt that it's important for it to be done on vellum still?
Well, I think it's partly tradition, but actually it's also because every other kind of way of storing them runs out. In other words, even archival paper, and they're also worried about digital storage.
So who's the Cabinet Office Minister really pushing all this? Does anyone know?
Matthew Hancock.
Matthew Hancock. And why else has he been in the news this week?
Because he's trying to sell a hell of a lot of cows.
And he's accepted a £4,000 donation from the chairman of the Institute of Economic Affairs before announcing a clampdown on lobbying by charities promoted by the right-wing think tank. But I think basically a pretty straight-up sort of guy, yeah? Is that fair? And what did Jacob Rees-Mogg have to say about all this? For or against?
Oh, he'd have been... He'd have said it was too advanced technologically. There's no reason at all to get rid of the old scrolls used by ancient Sumerians.
What's wrong with a stone tablet? That's what he'd say. Yeah.
He said we should not abandon vellum. It tells us that our laws are serious. Rather than the joke we all took them to be.
Well, I always write my to-do lists on on vellum, because I just find it sort of makes them seem a lot more important, and I'm much more likely to get them done.
It tells you that they are serious.
Yeah, what do you do if you're vegetarian and you want to write something down?
You can't.
No.
Oh, no, they can do it with corn now. Corn vellum you can get.
I think you could use stone tablets, but apparently people can hack into those really easily. Sorry about that.
My big problem with vellum is that it's so annoying when it gets stuck in the printer. You get a vellum jam.
Yeah.
What is error 304?
You've got to call Apple to come round and sort that out.
Yeah. Matthew Hancock's house must be just covered in it, though, mustn't it? With all little post-it notes and vellum on the fridge and stuff, mustn't it?
Vellum toilet paper.
Remember to go, the kids, 3:15.
I don't think vellum toilet paper you would want, because the point of vellum is it sticks around for absolutely ages. Ink settles on it and will not leave it, so quite what you would do with it.
It shows you, though. It shows you to take it seriously. See, it wasn't easy being in the aristocracy in the 8th century.
Verily, this is the most thrilling government U-turn experienced so far. For the last 1,000 years, British laws have been recorded on vellum, which is a sort of stretched calfskin, I would remind you all, I'm sure, quite unnecessarily. There were plans to stop doing this, but the Cabinet Office say that despite the ongoing austerity measures, they have somehow found the cash to carry on scribbling words on bits of dead cow. Matthew Hancock, MP, who advocates the use of vellum, said, "While the world constantly changes, we should safeguard some of our great traditions before desperately trying to fit a British Frisian through a Hewlett-Packard laser jet." Hardcore vegans who refuse to use any animal product are, of course, therefore exempt from British law, and so can therefore lay with whoever's wife they choose. Have fun, guys, but do stay safe. Personally, I'm with the Cabinet on this one. Who wants to go to the hassle of going all the way to the stationery cupboard when you could simply put down some bin bags and get on with flaying a calf? This is why MPs shout so loudly at Prime Minister's questions. They're just trying to cover up the shrieks of animal distress from the adjacent abattoir. Two points to Danny. Holly, who wants to ring in some sporting changes?
Oh, this is the... I don't know what they're called, the National Society of Bell Ringers or the Campanology Group, whatever. They want bell ringing to be classed as a sport and not a pastime, which I think is one of the more important pressing matters of our age. And I find it amazing that they want it to be a sport. I was trying to think what else I would have on my list of things that should be made a sport. And so far I've got changing a duvet.
Yes, you have different categories, couldn't you? You could have sort of
single, doubles,
exactly. Queen size.
I think definitely should be a sport is getting a brolly back into that sort of brolly sheath that they give you. That is skillful and quite tiring. Now I think about it, I can imagine it being in my gym. I go to one of those sort of pretentious gyms where they have sort of pole dancing classes to lose weight and things
like that. I always think about when I go to lap dancing bars, I think, God, this place is pretentious. Look at me sitting on my hands like a fancy Dan. Yeah.
I find all those classes, appropriation of things for sport, I find annoying. Like in my gym, we have Bhangra Beats, which is Indian music, and you do sort of Indian moves to... It's very patronising, but I wonder if in India they do things like Morris Blast. Where it's just basically aerobics with some tissues. That's... Yeah.
Does anyone think it's possible that it could become a sport? I mean,
no,
do you think it could attract sponsorship?
Thing. I get cross about this. Sport's got to be an element of competition about it. You can't just have... If you say anything's a sport that people can just judge, then absolutely you might as well have painting and decorating as a sport and have all these... Always got all the corners, 5.8. It's... It's stupid, isn't it? Anything can be a sport.
Yeah, but wouldn't you like to see some sort of like Premier League for bell ring? I mean, I'd love to see Wells Cathedral go to Europe. That would be...
What a couple of rings from the plucky underdogs from Wells. But in the end, the class of Notre Dame shone through. With Gary Neville or something, all them little things where they put... what's he doing there? You know, have you ever watched the sort of the... after the commentary and then the football pundits, they have...
They move people around.
And I always think that should be a whole programme and it should be just called, What's He Doing There? They spend about 20 minutes... And, right, if we have a look at the centre-back, what's he doing there? He should be there, but he's there. And look at the goalkeeper. He's come out from there. He should be... What's he doing there? Look at this guy in the crowd. He's in the wrong seat. What's he doing there? He should be there, and the referee's there when he should be there. What's he doing there? That's all for this week. Come back tomorrow for the next episode of What's He Doing There?
I suppose their supporters might be like the congregation, would they, following them around, kind of going, ring your bell, ring your bell, ring your bell. That was incredible. Here we go, he's going home in a freaking ambulance.
And then they would
sing
like, ding, 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 ding. Yeah, imagine if it was a sport that you could get steroid abuse.
Yes, imagine terrible news for campanology today. All around the world, people absolutely rocked by the Turkish team having been sent home for failing the drugs test.
We should have known. We could hear them from London.
Analogically, this is the move by bell ringers to have bell ring officially classed as a sport. Readers of Ringing World, and let's face it, who isn't, insist the church activity is an art and a sport, hoping to get it into the same bracket as Impressionist sit-ups and pre-Raphaelite judo. Ringing enthusiast Ted Venn said making ringing a sport could save it from becoming obsolete, although given that it's withstood the invention of the clock and the diary, I reckon it's probably here to stay. Bell ringing sessions can last as long as 3 hours or less if those taking part suddenly realise how tedious it is. Two points to Holly. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Mark.
This was in The Independent this week. This says, Cleveland teenage footballer Brian Garuto has been dismissed from the league, the reasons given in an email that reads, Hello, Mr. Garuto. After a meeting with management, we have banned you from our league because of your behaviour, such as wearing a cowboy hat during the game, pretending to give birth to the ball after scoring, pretending to shoot a bow and arrow at opposing players and getting sent off and then changing jerseys and attempting to play the rest of the match while pretending to be someone else.
Vicky.
This one is from Orlando Murrin, who said, I thought listeners might enjoy the combination of the headline and the sub-headline. And it's from the Jersey Evening Post, and it says, Thursday, name your dog poo hotspots. And then underneath it, it says, over 60 jobs.
Danny.
Anna Corden saw this notice at the reception desk of the Riverside Outpatients Clinic in Ipswich. It says, for blood tests, please follow the red dots on the floor next to the next.
Holly.
And this one is from Mark Emptage from Llandudno, and this is a Talk Talk TV listing. It says, 8 o'clock, Shark Attack, California. 8:30, 2.5 men.
Thank you, and now let's take a look at the final score. Mark and Vicky have 9, but this week's winners are Danny and Holly with 12. Before we leave you, here is an extract from the newsletter sent out by Richard Harrington MP.
We understand that there have been some unfounded rumours going around concerning the closure of the 142 and 258 bus routes. We're very glad to be able to confirm that these bus services are going absolutely nowhere.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Mark Steele, Vicky Pepperdine, Danny Finkelstein and Holly Walsh. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Caroline Nichols. The chair's script was written by James Bugg, James Kettle and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Alex Lynch. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Radio Comedy production.